Welcome back to Brain Body Movement, the podcast for those interested in everything nutrition, training, and mindset. I'm one of your hosts, Brad, and I'll be joined by my co-host, Brock. Today's episode was a Q&A where we answered four questions that got sent to us through social media. Question number one, I find myself eating when feeling anxious or overwhelmed. Do you have any tips to overcome emotional eating? Question number two, how do you get a client that is unwilling to track their protein intake? Question number three, what are the pros and cons of caffeine? And question number four, can I get to 10% body fat in 10 weeks? That was in the back half of the show. And in the front half, we discussed passion and purpose, Oura Ring, my caffeine usage, Brock's marathon training structure, a study on protein and aging, and gave a couple of random facts. All right, enjoy the show. Your passion in life should fit you exactly, but your purpose in life should exceed you. Work for something much larger than yourself.
On a mission to make the world a happier and healthier place, one person at a time. And I don't care how slow that progress is, but that has always been my mantra, my motto, or why I do what I do. Big part of the reason why we started this podcast, just to make the world a happier and healthier place and do so one person at a time. This is probably my favorite unsolicited advice to date. Your take on it, hit me with it.
Oh, I love it. It's one of those things where like your passion in life should fit you exactly. So like you kind of mold your passion over time, but unless you've got an actual purpose in life, like they can't really be the same, can they? Because like it, one is just like, yeah, I'm living my life right now. Like I'm living my passion, but my purpose is so far ahead. I probably won't get. Like I won't get my purpose. Like, my purpose in life is obviously to help like everyone get into health and fitness. Right, that's not going to happen, but that's okay because it exceeds me. And then my passion is just like fits me to a T of like I'm just going to help whoever I can, whenever I can, and it could be like a 10-second conversation, and that's me helping someone in my eyes anyway. Because then that can snowball. Sometimes they, you know, might be drunk and not remember. But still, I'm just going to say, even like people can hear you talk about it like from across the table or whatever. So I love it. It's, I think it kind of drills down the point that like working for something much larger than yourself. So people, I think, have a scarce mindset, and fair enough, especially if you can barely pay rent or buy food and shit like that. Like, you know, you got to get your needs met first. You know, of like food, shelter. Once they're done, then you've got, you know, your discretionary spending. So things where, you know, appetizers, you can like spend on a car wherever you want. And then it's like, okay, you have so much money now, what do you do with it? And that's where people are like, you know, Elon Musk trying to go to Mars, even though he's not number one in the world anymore of the richest man. So that's
really, when did that happen?
Yeah. Oh, not too long ago, maybe like, I don't know when exactly, but I remember hearing Hormozy talk about it. I was like, wait,
is it
what?
Some Indian geezer?
No. It's the guy who owns, who is it? All those luxurious brands and stuff, you know, Chanel and Louis Vuitton and stuff. He's got like a whole conglomerate of them together. And he's like, yeah, $214 billion or something he's worth. And Elon, I think, dropped down to like 204 or something. Which is just fucking crazy, like how much he's lost. But obviously that's his net worth, meaning like sets and stuff. That's why that can go up and down. It's not like he has that in the fucking bank. Mm-hmm. That's what I think people also don't understand. It's like billionaires don't have $1 billion in the bank. They pretty, unless, I mean, there could be some.
Assets, shares.
Yeah, it's asset. Yeah. Asset, yeah. And people are like, oh, asset rich, money poor. It's like, yeah, but you're still fucking asset rich. Like, anyways. So yeah, I think people like that, gives you the capability to think further. And it's hard when you are down and you're fucking thinking of your next meal kind of thing. But I think if you think broader and larger, then it'll take care of itself. So like say you go, all right, this week, I want to make sure that I make $1,000. You might fall short of it, but if you tried for like $10,000, you would think differently, or even $100,000, you would think differently. And then inevitably that $1,000 would just be nothing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great that it should exceed you. And yeah, I think just working for something much larger than yourself, which is great.
Yeah. So if I was to ask you, you already highlighted what your purpose was. So you want to introduce or encourage as many people as possible to enter into health and fitness and look after their health and well-being. Passion. What's your passion? What is Bradley Dapper passionate about?
Oh, I'm passionate about a lot of things in life. Like health and fitness is obviously the number one thing. Taking care of myself, helping people is a passion. Learning is a passion. All these kind of things, and they kind of all combine into one big purpose, which is like these mini things. Like I could sit here and bore you over all the passions that I have, but I think also over time they kind of come to you as well. Like the better you get at them, and you wouldn't even know unless you try certain things. So I was like obviously plumbing for 13 years, and I didn't have like I liked working out, but it wasn't a passion to help people. It was more to help myself. And once I helped myself, went to London, got the old prefrontal cortex online. That's when I was like, okay, now I can actually, I want to help people because now I have this knowledge and it's helped me so much. So I think, yeah, small little passions along the way will build your overall purpose. And yeah, it's ever evolving as well. Like it might tweak here and there. You change, life circumstances might change. So it's not like a set in stone kind of thing. You can chip that out and pour some new concrete and then ride in it if you want.
I like that. Tip that out. Pour some new concrete. Yeah, I think we're very similar in that train of thought there. I was kind of hoping to get like a one answer from you because I couldn't think of one myself. So I think we're very similar in the train of thought of many passions which combine to be things that you are passionate about, and then you've got your overarching purpose, which again is as a very similar, you want to introduce and encourage many people to look after their health and wellness, and I'm just want to make world a happier, healthier place, one person at a time. Very, very similar there. Probably hence why we have a bloody podcast
You would think so.
together. Hey, speaking of health and fitness, this is not sponsored. I just want to give a huge rap to Oura Ring, like a massive, massive rap. So probably 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, I've woken up. I'm like, oh, I'm really interested to see my HRV data because it was after my longest ever run and I felt rank after that run. So I was like, oh, I'll wake up in the morning and I'll check my HRV, see what my heart rate's doing, blah, 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 see what my recovery's like. I go to check it and there's no data. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? I was like, oh, I'll just leave it. Went to bed that night, wake up the next morning, again, no data. I'm like, what is going on? And I put my ring on charge and it was dead flat. And I'm like, that's strange. Like, usually it lasts me all weekend. So I emailed them and, like, hey, I'm having a bit of an issue with my ring. I don't think it's a syncing issue. It's connected to the app, blah, blah, blah. They're like, no worries. We think it's a syncing issue. And I'm like, okay, I don't think it is, but we'll see. I'll follow their procedures. Follow their procedures, not a syncing issue. And then I realized that it was syncing data to the app. But the ring was only battery-wise lasting like maybe 15, 20 minutes, which you're not going to accumulate a whole lot of sleep data in 15, 20 minutes, are you?
No.
So I sent a screen recording of how quickly the battery was draining out of the ring, emailed that back to them, and they didn't even reply with, we think it's a battery issue. We think it's this. We're like, hey, new ring is on the way. You'll get an email confirmation of when the new ring has been shipped, and then it should be 8 to or 7 to 10 business days from then.
Beautiful.
Well, the email confirmation came that day and the ring arrived in 5 days. So,
Beautiful.
their customer service, I cannot recommend Oura Ring enough to people. One, for just it's fundamentally changed aspects of my life and how I look after myself and in particular my sleep hygiene. Like, there is a stark difference between when I follow like just a 20-minute or 25-minute nighttime routine compared to when I don't. And when I say stark, I mean instead of waking maybe 2 or 3 times throughout the night, like little micro wakes, I won't wake at all. I might wake to go to the toilet. That's about it. I have more time in deep sleep. I have more time in REM sleep. My sleep efficiency is better. Like, these are all drastic measures. My HRV is up about 10 to 15 points. And this is just by following a 20 to 25 minute nighttime routine. And if I don't do it, I will notice that the next morning. So, shout out to Oura Ring, one for great customer service, two for a great product. And if you don't have one, highly recommend you get one because, like I said, they've fundamentally improved aspects of my health and well-being, and I can't recommend them highly enough.
Yeah. Just use discount code Brain Body Movement at checkout. No, we're not sponsored. Yeah, I've also got one and have had one for years as well. And it just gives you great data knowing what affects your sleep. Like alcohol is a big one for me. When you eat close to bed as well is another one for me. And one that I've kind of come to the, what's the word? Realization slash maybe it's time for me to look at is caffeine. Now, the reason why is because we have a question later about caffeine. So I was obviously doing some research to it and with it. And I'm like, you know what? It's been a while since I haven't not had caffeine throughout the day. And since like I haven't been having alcohol, and it's been almost a month now. In 2 days, it'll be exactly a month I'd be free from drinking any alcohol at all. It's
Well
funny I
done.
say it's thank you. It's funny I say free, but it's like I haven't thought about it at all. And that's a strategy that I like to use. I know in the past, when I put things out, I put too much stress on myself. So right now, at this 30-day mark or 28-day mark, I feel confident enough now that I can start to tell people and start to share what I've learned and stuff, which is, like I brought it up on the podcast, but I haven't like put it out to many people unless they ask. And yeah, one definitely like way more productive, way more clear in the way that I'm thinking, getting more work done, and I'm not fucked in the morning like from a weekend out as well. If I do go out, it's just like tiredness, which is goes back to the sleep of how important sleep is as well. So I'm going to also do no caffeine. I have to probably minimize it first because I'm quite high. Yeah, I'm
How many
quite high.
milligrams a day would you say?
Yeah, oh yeah, a couple.
How the no monster go? Can I check in on that?
Oh yeah, I went a week without no Monster. Great.
Yeah.
I was fine with that. I just like having something there when I'm working to keep me more focused and stuff. And it was more out of habit than it was out of necessity, which is totally fine. I am obviously drinking a Monster now. I like drinking Monster when we podcast. So when I do cut down, that's going to be hard for me. But it's just having something there. So that's why I love the Coke Zero, no caffeine, no sugars. They're great. But yeah, I think it's just one step at a time. I think if I went caffeine, no alcohol, you know, all this kind of shit, I would probably fail. So I know myself, and I know I'm just going to add on top of what I'm already doing. And now I know that I don't drink alcohol, and I got tested as well with the alcohol, and I pushed through and I got through it. So it was great. So now it's like, okay, it's caffeine time. And that's one thing where it's just such a ritual in my life of waking up, making me and the missus coffees, you know, going to the gym, pre-workout, having monsters throughout the day. Like if I was to add it up, you'd probably have what's a coffee, like 80 milligrams or something, roughly.
Yeah, 80, depending on how many shots.
Yep. It's probably around 80 because it's pretty standard. Then the monsters are
And then a monster's
160.
160.
So that's like 240. And then pre-workout, I'll have, I think, what's a serving like?
What's your pre-workout?
The bulk nutrients.
Oh, yep.
I think that's nearly like 150 as well, even maybe
So
more.
you're pushing close to 400
Four or
milligrams
five
a
hundred.
day.
I reckon I'm at least, yeah, between 400 to 600 milligrams, which is, yeah,
Yeah, it's quite high.
probably like 4 to 6 grams per kilo, which is definitely high. I've always thought that I am a fast metabolizer of caffeine, but in researching the caffeine question, they did a study of like 100 people, and they only had 13 that were fast responders, so or fast metabolizers, so which kind of puts some doubts in my mind whether I am or not, and I just say that I am, which placebo is very powerful. I just might not be it, but that's the thing. Like I. I've had caffeine late at night and I don't get jittery. Like the only time I get jittery is if I then add on like some Nodos on top of that and then have another coffee and go maybe into the thousands. That's where you can get a bit how you going.
And
But I
you've done that
mean,
before?
oh yeah, definitely done that, mate. Definitely done that. Imagine like back in the day, I used to do like vodka Red Bulls like in town and these things called Rhythm, I think. They were either, was it Rhythm or something else in like this club called Red Square, and there was these energy drinks, and fuck yeah, that would get your heart going for sure.
Yeah,
Anyway.
see, I used to work security, and I'd pound mothers into the core of the earth, like you wouldn't believe. And they're obviously highly caffeinated, and I was doing that till 2 in the morning,
Yeah.
so sober, working as a security guard, just
Yeah.
pounding mothers, idiot. You don't know
The
what you don't
drink
know,
or
right?
just the drink or actual mothers?
No, both.
Okay,
No,
yeah, fair enough.
the drink.
It's something now that I'm like, okay, well, I'm giving up alcohol. Well, not giving up, I'm just not drinking alcohol, not even thinking about it, which is the best thing to do when you want to give up something, is try not to think about it. So caffeine's the next one. But I'll probably, yeah, cut it in half first for the next like week or two, because I know in the past I have tried and just massive headaches. And sometimes I do get headaches, and I wonder if it's because I'm having too much caffeine as well. So I'm like, all right, let's see if I can go to the gym without caffeine, wake up without caffeine, all these kind of things. So I'll come back to this in the next few weeks and tell you how I'm going and stuff. But yeah, it's one of these things that is so acceptable to just go out for a coffee. It's also acceptable to have alcohol. So yeah, but
You
I'm
know
gonna
my
tackle it.
thoughts. Caffeinate and sedate, caffeinate and sedate,
Yeah.
caffeinate
Yep.
and sedate.
So we'll see how I go.
Interesting that you're doing this because I've done the exact same thing over the past 3 to 4 weeks with caffeine consumption. So I was realizing that I was having a coffee every day, and then on days where I was training legs, I was having pre-workout as well. So I started just by going back to having one serving of caffeine a day.
What's
And
one
as
serving?
of
Like 80 to
so
100
e either
milliliters?
either either just a coffee or just the pre-workout. Whereas on the leg days, I was having a coffee and the pre-workout. And then as of this week, I've only trained Wednesday, I've run today, and I train tomorrow. So tomorrow will be the first day where I train without caffeine. And then what I'm going to do, or what I'm intending to do over the weekend, is have my last bout of caffeine after I run in the morning, and then go from then until the Monday completely caffeine free. Hopefully any symptoms of like taking a full day off, like a headache or a little bit of lethargy, will be the Sunday, and then I'll hopefully feel okay on the Monday morning. Now, depending on how I feel will depend on whether I have something before I train on that Monday. On the Tuesday, I will be running first thing in the morning because I've rescheduled my week to accommodate an extra run. So I'll run then, and I won't have caffeine before that because an energy drink and bubbly in my stomach, no great, not great. A coffee in my stomach, not ideally great before a run. So I'll run without caffeine and then go through the rest of the day. And then that will be 3 to 4 days by then, caffeine free. And then I may have something on the Wednesday. We'll see how I feel. The one day that I'm a bit iffy of is the day that we're recording here, the Thursday. I can only run in the afternoon. And if I'm feeling a bit of lethargy, come what time of us recording? 12:31. I may lean towards a coffee then. Otherwise, I'm going to try and go through mainly caffeine free throughout the week and then utilize it after a long run or as like a take myself out to a cafe and make it have more meaning, like how it used to do to me. Because you know how I used to just have coffee on a weekend and it would be an experience. That's what I want to make it again, not just having a coffee for the sake of it.
So have you been caffeine free at all over the past 3 to 4 weeks? Like a day without it?
Nah, so I've
You haven't?
slowly gone down.
Yep.
Today's the first day where I've really cut back. So what's in a Coke Zero? I don't know.
Oh,
That'd be
like
next to nothing.
30 milligrams?
Yeah. So I had that about an hour ago because I was getting a headache, and I was like, I don't want to have a headache and lead into the first run of marathon prep with a headache.
Yep. No, you don't
So,
want that.
no, that's the last thing you want. Already got enough head noise about it. So,
No.
speaking of, 80 days
Yeah.
as of today,
Awesome.
and I registered myself, literally half an hour ago.
Oh, how good. Congratulations,
So
mate.
I'm all registered. I'm enrolled. I am officially doing it. Like I always was doing it, but I'm officially doing this damn thing. I've got my program sorted. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, how do you feel?
I feel better knowing that I'm actually in prep now. Like I'm not just running to build a body of evidence. Like I'm actually like this is structured. Like today it's a tempo run. And then Saturday I know I'm running exactly however many Ks I've got programmed. And then on Tuesday I know that it's a tempo run. And then on Thursday I know that that's a shorter run at a moderate pace. Then I've got the long run. I know that there's a structure. What I do with my training, I think that I won't follow a structured program the first 2 weeks while I adapt to increasing the running volume. My initial thought, and I appreciate some of your feedback here as well. My initial thought is like I'll go a full body on a Monday. I'll do my tempo run on a Tuesday. So that will be like say 1K at a certain pace, 1K at above race pace, 1K at and vice versa, and that distance will get progressively longer. Wednesday, I'm thinking again, full body. Thursday will be the moderate paced run, so probably something a little bit slower than race pace. Friday, I was thinking upper body because I have the long run on the Sunday and I don't particularly want to have any fatigue from lifting weights in my legs, and then Sunday would be rest.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty well adapted anyway with your legs, aren't you? So.
I would think so. And I think a lot of the movements with my strength training side of things with the full body, they will be like reverse lunges, step ups, single leg RDLs, Kozak squats, lying leg curls, maybe some banded VMO drills just to really strengthen and stabilize my knee, tibialis raises, calf raises, those sort of things. And then all my upper body will be just trying to retain as much muscle mass as humanly possible while this calorie expenditure through increasing my running load continues to build.
Yeah, because then you're gonna get into the old recovery aspect of like, well, these
Yeah.
calories are getting there, and then you're putting load on top, and then yeah, because your legs will be just getting pounded. So,
Hounded, absolutely.
absolute pound.
That's a thing that I think with the rise of this hybrid training model and people doing like say running and lifting weights or yoga and lifting weights and combining different modalities of what is health and fitness, I think what people aren't taking into account is if you increase your running volume and don't increase your lifting weights volume, you've increased your volume. Like it's going to be more taxing on the body. Like you need to balance that out. Same goes with if you start swimming more. Like if you start swimming more, you've increased your swimming volume. You've only got so much volume you can give. And that has increased. So you're going to have to give some away from your weights. So I've added in an extra running day, which means I've taken a day of weights away. And my volume on my legs is now going from running twice a week and training two specific leg days a week to just two full body days where I might do two or three exercises. So like my volume has drastically reduced on my legs, but that's because my goal is running. So majority of my volume should be spent going towards my running. And I think that's something that people aren't really taking into account when they are starting on a new venture while still wanting to continue lifting weights. They're just adding in more, not realizing that you reach a threshold where you just can't progressively add more and more and more and more.
And in regards to your exercise selection for your legs, are you doing, so you see, you said there was a few single leg exercises in there, and then even some leg curls. Like, are they damaging to you, in regards to
Leg
like the next day?
curls.
Like, they're
Nah,
okay?
leg curls don't create a whole lot of fatigue. So what I'll probably do this first block is I'll probably make it a little bit more strength based. So I'll probably do things like Nordic curls and reverse Nordic curls, which are a bit more taxing. And then as that volume increases, the running distance, because my running volume this first week is only like 24K or something. And it gradually goes up to week nine, where it's at 72K I cover in that week. So
Right.
that week will be a week, that'll be the final week of a training block, and then I'll go into 2 weeks of just essentially body weight training. So it'll be using no weight. I've got that all planned out, that training side of things. But it'll be the more intense like Nordic curls, reverse Nordic curls this first 2 weeks, and then that will move to leg extensions, lying leg curls, lighter loads, feeling pauses, like really controlling and owning the movement, making sure I get good contraction in the muscle, particularly with like VMO. And the lying leg curl is because, I mean, when you curl up off the ground, it's what you're pulling with your hamstring. So it's quite relevant. And then that will probably progress into single leg lying leg curls as I get closer to race day. I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot through this next 11 and a half weeks. Like I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot about one, just how much volume these legs can take in regards to running and lifting weights. It's always been something that I've had a pretty good base with through my younger years of playing footy, and like playing footy and then trying to get your legs as strong as possible so you can drive through tackles and push in scrums, etc. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how I go, but that's my plan at this stage. Full body tempo, full body moderate, full body long.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds not
Oh,
too bad.
sorry, upper body long, not
Upper
full
body
body on
long.
that last
Yeah,
one.
okay, yeah, upper body long. Yeah, it sounds not too bad. You obviously adjust it as seeing fit when if you get too sore with certain exercises.
I think there'll be a lot of manipulating as I go along, right? Like usually I'm very much okay, I've written a program, I've created a structure, I stick to it. Whereas I think there'll be lots of learning and adjusting on the fly as I go. So it's 11 and a half weeks now. My theory is 4 to 5 weeks of this block, 4 to 5 weeks of the next block, and then 1 to 2 weeks of just strictly body weight. So it'll be like push-ups, pull-ups, and body weight lunges, Kozak squats, step-ups, that sort of stuff leading in, where there's just barely any resistance on the body. It's just enough to stimulate the muscles and make sure all my joints are moving well and I'm going through a nice full range of motion with all those movements.
And then in regards to your nutrition and that, are you changing it? Are you getting used to all the gummies or whatever, the glucose? Are you having supplements on top now?
Yeah, so the gels aren't sitting well with me. So I'm going to have to find a new kind of gel. They're really upsetting my stomach and I'm noticing some repercussions of that throughout the Saturday. In terms of nutrition, what I'm going to do these first probably 2 weeks leading into then 10 weeks pre-marathon, I'm going to reduce calories. I'm going to try and lose some weight fairly quickly over these next 2 weeks while performance doesn't matter as much because I'm a fair way out. Lose some weight, get myself probably under 90 kilos, somewhere around that 88, because I usually sit around 92, 93. I'm currently at around 90 and a half, 91. So if I can get down to around 87, 88, I think I'll just be a bit friendlier on my joints, particularly my knees. And then as my running volume increases and therefore my calorie expenditure increases, I'm hoping to be able to ramp up my calorie intake getting closer to race day. And then obviously I'll have to speak to someone about a carb up protocol beforehand. I'm pretty clued in on that. I'm like 2 to 3 days beforehand of having the fuel come in to give me the surplus of energy to perform the marathon. But yeah, that's my initial plan at this stage is a bit of a deficit, lose a little bit of weight these first 1 to 2 weeks, get myself probably quite lean to a leanness that I don't particularly like maintaining. Just to be more favorable on the joints, hips, knees, and then from there gradually increase calories leading into race day. And that's not a case of gradually increasing calories because I can. It's to try and aid performance and recovery
Oh,
and make
definitely.
sure that I'm still performing well and still recovering well.
Because I think a lot of people, they might ramp up volume and then just not change their nutrition one
Yeah,
bit.
yeah.
And they're like, oh, why am I so sore? Why can't I sleep like this? And it's like,
Am
well,
I
have you?
overtraining?
Yeah,
No, you're under recovering.
exactly. Under recovering, you got to eat more. And then that'll help with sleep and stuff. And what about supplements? I know that there is some data on beta alanine really helping with performance for long distances and stuff, like with CrossFit. I don't know if it comes down to things like for running exactly. But yeah.
You've got to take it regularly, right? Like it's something like creatine where it's got to saturate in the muscle bellies and stores, and it's not something
I
I'm
mean, it'll
going
be
to be
like
taking regularly.
3 to 4 weeks. But I think it should be just like creatine.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
hey,
no, it's not
no,
something I'm
if
going to play around with. I might take something like a, I don't know how much, evidence there is in like a glucosamine or some sort of joint health supplement, as I'm going to be pounding the pavement with my knees. Fish oil is something I may introduce for the reason of it's a little bit of a blood thinner. So if blood can move around my body a little bit easier because it's thinner, then that may be of benefit to me.
Take some aspirin, mate. That'll clean your blood.
Thanks. But yeah, I'm not really too concerned on supplements. My focus will be my actual dietary intake and making sure that is optimal before I go down a supplement route. But there's nothing that I really feel as though I have a shortcoming in. Like I feel as though I cover most of it through my actual food intake. The only one is protein powder, creatine.
Yeah, for sure. I just
They're the
thought I'd
two.
ask just to see
If
what people actually do.
something does come up, I'll bring it up for sure though.
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
Now, I wanted to bring up a little bit of a study. Let's bring on a study segment. And this is in regards to protein, which is something that I just mentioned. There was a study done on the effects of protein and its effect on healthy aging. Now, they concluded that protein has a positive effect on healthy aging. Now, I'm not really concerned about protein itself. I'm more thinking of like the mechanisms of why this may be. Now, for me, we know that protein's muscle sparing, right? So if someone's going to be consuming more protein, it's more likely that they're going to retain more muscle mass. Now, if you're retaining more muscle mass, that's a pretty clear indicator of health and longevity, right? Like the more muscle mass you have, that's the data's pretty clear on that, that the more strength and muscle mass you can maintain as you age, the healthier you'll be, less risk of injury, et cetera, et cetera. So I found that interesting in that fact that they weren't really discussing that that may be the reason why they were literally talking about protein itself. But to me, that's a clear indicator. Plus, someone that eats more protein is often going to be more health conscious anyway as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you know what protein sources are, usually the sources of protein are usually healthier foods in that regard as well. And they found in that study, it was the cohort of, what was it like?
50,000 nurses.
Yeah, like 50,000 nurses in America. And it was to do with like what's healthy aging. And it was like under 8% of them were considered healthy aging, which I thought was fucking ridiculous. Like, which is why we're in this space to help people like this out. Because after, I think it was like they didn't have memory impairments, the physical like ability was all good, and then 11 different diseases they didn't have. So only 8% out of the whole like cohort, which was crazy. So yeah, and they found that vegan sources of protein was the best, but like that can conclude, like, it doesn't really matter as long as it's some sort of protein, you know. Like, it just showed that more people had better outcomes with the vegan sources, but it's whatever. As long as it was not as much red meat, like processed meat, and a little bit of red meat, and still had like poultry and what else was there? Like
Eggs, dairy.
eggs and dairy and stuff. So as long as you're getting your protein in, yeah, they found that they seem to have healthy aging in that group. But yeah, I
And
didn't.
see,
Yeah, go on.
that's the thing as well. Like, if someone's going to be eating a more vegan-based diet, that again, they're probably going to be a more health-conscious person and make more like health-conscious decisions. So, yeah, it blows me away when studies like that release, right? And they don't like have something written in there about this. Like, we think that this may be a potential reason why it was just like, okay, eat more protein, essentially.
Well, that's the thing with the one study. They have to be specific of like what they were looking for, because what you're talking about is, I think it was like, oh, because they put in what they're looking for, and then you got to see the research. Whereas, like, if you're like, oh yeah, and then we also found this, it could be because of this, and it just like it gets off the point of like what they're actually trying to study. So that's probably why they did that.
Plus attention-grabbing headlines.
Yeah.
All
All right.
right, enough of with our own confirmation bias in regards to sleep, caffeine, and amount of protein you should be eating. Hit me with a random fact.
Alrighty. Today's fact is about the chair and the throne. So historically, the chair symbolized power and authority. So, for example, thrones were used as the seats of power in various cultures, and the term chairman or chairperson still denotes a position of authority today.
There you go.
I thought that was pretty interesting. I was like, oh, the chairman, of course, that's where it came from.
Yeah. Chairman of the board.
Board, exactly right.
Yeah. Ah, well, there you go. Learn something new every day. Mine's about crabs. Now, the ghost crab has teeth inside of its stomach. Now, to me, that's pretty baffling. It's got it for two reasons. So the teeth is used for growling at enemies.
Right.
Yeah. And they rub together as well. So when they ingest food, the teeth rub together to grind up and sort of turn their food into mush. So it makes it easier for them to digest.
Yeah, right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I did
Teeth
that. Is
inside
it
their stomach.
just the ghost crab, is it?
I don't know if it's just a ghost crab, but that is the crab that
Researching.
yeah. Well, not researching. I don't just sit there researching animals.
I mean, you sure? Because that's all you talk about in our facts.
Big body of evidence that all I do with my spare time is research animals.
That's it.
Okay, let's get stuck into some questions.
Let's do it. Hey, just before we get to the questions, if you've enjoyed this episode or previous episodes, could you please share it with someone that would get value from it? The only way to grow the brain body movement is if you share this. It's just a few tap of the fingers and it would truly mean the world to both of us. Thanks again for listening. All right, let's get back to the show.
Question number one. I find myself eating when feeling anxious or overwhelmed. Do you have any tips to overcome emotional eating?
Some tips to overcome emotional eating. First one is trying to find the triggers that's making you emotional and leading towards food. Obviously, food is a mechanism that is soothing to you, and you're not going to stop eating if you keep getting triggered. So it's finding the triggers that's triggering you. Sometimes you might just be emotional just because of whatever, and that's fine also. But if you can try and pinpoint, oh, whenever I go to this person's house, or whenever I have this conversation, or whenever I think about this certain thing, I get emotional and then I break and then I start to eat. And it's just trying to extend the time of when you get triggered to the time that you put said food into your mouth. So you can obviously make your environment good for that and not have the food in the house. Like try and have some healthy snacks out. Make sure you have meal prep so it's nice and easy and the barrier is so easy for you to eat those kind of foods and harder to eat the shittier kind of foods. It's a hard one because I do, not me personally, but I do have clients that have dealt with this in the past as well. And it's a constant battle as well. And it's not just like a one and done thing. It's not like you can listen to this and you never feel overwhelmed again. Like I do feel overwhelmed sometimes. And sometimes I know that I want said foods and you do have to catch yourself. And it is a skill to use. And when you're heated up and it's really hard to get out of that. And you know you're doing it sometimes. You're like, I know I'm doing this. I just want it like and it can take over. But I think it's just being kind to yourself and knowing that, okay, this time I had a whole block. Maybe next time I can have like three quarters of the block or just a little bit each time. Or this time I waited 10 minutes before I ate said food or whatever it is. Just try and put like little strategies in so then it might get better over time, potentially. And if it's not like if it's been a long while and you're still dealing with this, I would seek professional help with something that might be going on. It's not usually related to food. Like you might have a bad relationship with food, but it's usually because of something else triggering it and you're using food or exercise or something else to soothe yourself. Some people use alcohol, some people use drugs. Like food is just an easy, accessible thing that a lot of people like and enjoy. And it does calm you down because it is parasympathetic when you rest and digest when you eat. And that's why you're feeling like, ah, I got the dopamine hit of the sugars and, fats and salts and all that kind of stuff. So that's just another thing as well. It's like trying to find the root cause of it. But then the little strategies throughout the day of like, okay, let's not have that food in here. Let's try and remove the triggers as go for a walk, you know, put on some music, trying to distract yourself from the overwhelm, deep breaths, all these kind of things. Find what's best suits for you, because yeah, we could say something on this podcast and you're like, oh, I've tried that and it doesn't work. And it's like, well, okay, we keep trying. You got to keep trying these things, or you're just going to be left with feeling overwhelmed and eating all the shit all the time. So you just got to keep going. And yeah, be kind to yourself if you do end up having the food.
That's the key point there. The last thing that you said, be kind to yourself. That is the paramount part here. Now, I didn't realize I was an emotional eater and self-soother through food until traveling solo on my own throughout Europe. And I'd had a really shit day, couldn't contact anyone from home, tried contacting friends, family, couldn't get hold of anyone, was stuck in this tiny little hostel that I hated. And I was like, you know what? And I didn't realize at the time. And now looking back, I'm like, oh, I've been a notorious self-soother with food throughout my life. So I totally understand this question and I totally get it. And I think the key point that you said that should be the main takeaway here is you want to create as much space between you feeling anxious, overwhelmed, emotional, and then actually putting the food in your mouth. So a couple of things that I personally do is I try not to keep that food in the house at all. Because that can be, okay, I've got the emotion, I'm anxious, I'm overwhelmed, whatever it may be, bang, can go straight to the cabin and get the food. That's not a lot of time. Whereas if I have to get in the car, go grab the food, I can then think about it on the way. I may do some breath work on the way, just something to calm me down a little bit. And by the time I maybe get to the supermarket, I may not want that. So creating as much space as possible can really help. Another tactic I've used in the past is writing what I'm feeling. By the time I finish writing what I'm feeling, I've got that out of my brain. I've got that thought process out. I've removed a little bit of the anxiety or feeling of being
Overwhelmed.
overwhelmed. Removed a lot of that from my body. It's again put more space in between time between me having the feeling and then eating the food. And that's what you want to create as much as possible. There's a whole heap of things you can do. Go for a walk, you mentioned. You could do some breath work. You can call a friend and be like, hey, I'm feeling like this. You just want to put as much time between the feeling and the food as possible. And there's no one size fits all here. So the personally for me, what I've done and what I do is I don't keep any of that food in the house. I just, one, I don't really eat it regularly. And two, it's just creating that space. And then the other one is writing. Now, let's say you have the feeling and you write down like what you're feeling, blah, blah, blah. I just really, and it could just be the case of I feel like this. I feel like eating this. This food makes me feel better. It could be as simple as that. But that's created time and space between you actually eating the food. Now, let's say you finish writing and you're like, yep, I still want to eat this food. Go ahead, by all means, eat the food. If that's going to self-soothe and make you feel better. But then you can't feel guilty about it afterwards because you're like, no, I've made the conscious decision. I've created the space and time, and I've still made the conscious decision to eat this food. So you don't feel guilty about it afterwards. You just go, okay, next time, how can I create more space? Or how can I create more time between when I have had an emotional episode and then the next time I have an emotional episode? That's all it's about doing. Like, okay, I went 4 days this time, and then I got that anxious, overwhelmed feeling. Next time, let's go for 5 days. And all you're doing is just looking to extend that time every single time in between. So extending the time between feeling and food, and then extending the time between when you do have the emotional eating episodes, which here says find myself eating when feeling anxious. So you want to extend the time in between that.
Yeah, exactly. And for people out there that are like, well, you know, I've got a partner, I've got kids, there's always going to be food around in the house and stuff. That's why I say hide said foods or just put them in containers where it's not visible. Like, have, like, when you're in the fridge, you want like the shittier foods, like maybe underneath in the drawers, same in the cupboards, like have them low or have them really high. So then it's not the first thing that you look at when you look at, you know, your pantry or your fridge. But yeah, it is that time from, what's it called? Stimulus to response. Yeah. That's what it is, isn't it? Yeah. From the stimulus to the response. So that you just need to keep extending it as much as you can with whatever tactics that you want, really. Because it might not work for you the first time even, and you might just have to keep trying and go, okay, maybe I just got to twist it this way a little bit. Like I can't go for a walk, but maybe I can just do some bodyweight stuff in the living room or something like that. And then you'll be like, ah, that's a lot better. Like I found myself in the last few weeks more stressed than normal, and a little bit of overwhelm with just like work stuff and that. And I'm just like, I gotta take a few deep breaths. I haven't taken some deep breaths in ages. I'm like, wow, I said to Elma, I'm like, I've been taking a lot of deep breaths lately. Just like a lot of overwhelm. And it does help me, and it just like brings you into that parasympathetic state again of like, oh, because what happens is you start to like shallow breathe, and you're just probably not getting enough oxygen into the brain, and then you're not thinking clearly, and then you're going for the sweets or whatever. So taking that deep breath definitely helps a lot. And it's just like, also, it's just like a trigger to get you back to the present as well. Because I think when you're overwhelmed, you're not thinking clearly, and you're like, oh, I gotta go grab some stuff. And like, it's just like, whoa, just wait, take a second. And then if you still want it, then go right ahead.
Yeah, and I will throw out the caveat of, let's say you've tried something in the past and it hasn't worked. Don't be like completely ruling it out and not trying it again. So for me, when I first realized that this was an actual thing that I used to do quite regularly, if you were to tell like a 24, 25-year-old Brock to write down his feelings and emotions into a journal before eating the food, and then if he still wants to eat the food, go ahead, he would have gone, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like, have you got rocks in your head, mate? Like, I'm just gonna eat the food, like, grow up." But now I'm at a point where I have progressed through where I used to write, and then whether I decided or not I'd eat the food would still be up to me. Now I don't even write. It's just I have a list of questions that I ask myself, and it's like, will future Brock be happy with the decision? Is this just a feeling and angst in the moment? The moment shall pass, but you shall remain. Like, there's all these little prompts now that I go through in my head without having to write. So just because something hasn't worked for you in the past doesn't mean it might not work for you in the future. So there's the saying, the same man never crosses the same river twice. It's always a different man and it's always a different river. So something that may not have resonated with you in the past may resonate with you now and be applicable to you now. So just because you tried something 5 years ago doesn't mean it's a no forever for you.
Yeah, because you've got different experiences and you can see the world differently in years to come, even sometimes weeks. Like you could just have like a little light bulb moment and you're like, oh shit, why the fuck did I do that last week? I'm gonna do that this week now. Like
Yes, circumstances change, people change, so things that may work for you change over time. One thing in life that's inevitable, change.
and taxes and death.
Death. Question number two, how do you get a client that is unwilling to track to hit their protein target?
Yeah, so I guess it's the education around what foods involve protein, telling them the importance of protein. We brought it up today of the importance of having protein. And it's just like, well, okay, you might not want to track, but let's see if we can get protein in each meal. That's a nice, easy one. Obviously, educate them around the protein sources. So start with your protein first and work your meal around that. Some nice high protein snacks could do as well. You could also use like visual cues as well. So like, the whole palm, like couple of palms worth of proteins. Oh yeah, that's about right. And in each meal of like chicken breast or mince or salmon or whatever it is, they're just like easy visuals for people to go, all right, this is getting our protein in. And then, yeah, and probably, I would probably start with just one meal first, and first meal probably of the day, where your breakfast, get high protein in then. So it's a lot easier to go, okay, well, I've got my high protein in the morning, and the other meals, not that they don't matter, but it's like it's harder trying to catch up protein than where you can just get a big bolus in the morning and then it sets you on the right path for the day.
Yeah, so I use two strategies when trying to get someone that's unwilling to track to hit their protein target, and that is visual and then education, which you touched on both. So visually, whether they take photos of their food or whether you send them photos of what a 30 or 40 gram protein serving looks like, that's one method you can use. There's also the palm method, or the knuckle wrist, whatever it's called, method that you mentioned as well. And then education. So, okay, a 160 gram portion of chicken breast is roughly this many grams of protein. And you're not getting them to weigh it, but let's say they get a pack of four chicken breasts that weighs a kilo. You can assume that it's roughly 250 grams per chicken breast. So if they're having a chicken breast, you can be like, okay, there's a kilo of chicken breast there. There's four chicken breasts. It's 250 grams of chicken breast, roughly. Close enough is good enough. That's roughly this many grams of protein. So if you have that, you're halfway to your protein target for the day. So it's really visual is the first point, and then education a bit around what protein sources that they eat regularly and the amount of protein that those protein sources have in them for a rough estimate. And that could just be like when you get salmon, there's a label on it, and you could have four pieces of salmon. There's a label. You'll know roughly weight without having to weigh it. Same with chicken, same with mince. If you grab a packet of mince and you get half of it, you know how much is in that because it's weighed out for you already. So education, visual are the two methods that I use.
Yeah, reading the labels as well is a good one of just knowing like what foods can actually contain protein, because people still think that peanut butter is a good source of protein.
Yeah, it's a great source of fat.
So yeah, it's just educating yourself as well of like, okay, well, what's actually on the back of the food that I'm eating? And obviously when you're eating whole foods, it's a little different. But it's just like, what protein foods are there? Not broccoli. All right. So we've discussed this before of like, yes, it might have a little bit of protein in it, but it's like it's not a protein rich food, meaning the highest calories from that is not protein. So you want to just make sure of that. Obviously, you got your meats and dairy and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, I think we're very much on the same page here. Educate first around how much protein is in rough estimates of protein and around nutritional labels. And then two, use visual cues for someone that's still unwilling to go down that education route. They're like, I just want to know what to eat. Well, okay, let's go visual cues and be like, okay, that's roughly this much from my estimates. Or is it around the size of a fistful of protein?
Yeah, because he's saying this is obviously a coach or a personal trainer asking this question because he wants to get, because he's talking about a client unwilling to track their protein. So it's also, you got to kind of work with them, work in with them, try not to make it feel like they're adding additional things onto it, like, because they obviously don't want to track. So they already think that it's hard enough already. So it's, I guess it's coming to them with the information of, like you said, like even just visuals of like, this is how much protein, like just give them a cheat sheet or something, make a cheat sheet for them so they can just quickly branch over and even just look at it, pop it up, because that seems like a client that just wants it all done for them or whatever, and not really willing to track their food, which is what we try and go down, because then you can actually know what's in food. So I would obviously like try, not convince them, but just like show them the value of tracking their food for a little bit. And if you can't, then do what we've said now. But you've got to be patient with clients like that. It's some they're just like, yeah, I'll track, and then they just don't. So I says, all right, well, let's just try and get some protein in there, like each meal.
Yeah.
Like that just yeah.
I think a lot of the hesitancy with tracking is people think it needs to be a forever thing. It's not a forever thing. One, it's an educational tool. And two, I often just use it for like dieting phases with majority of the people that I work with. Like we'd be real specific here. And then when you go into a gaining phase, spend some time away from tracking. Just eat to fuel your body, eat to nourish your body. It's doesn't have to be a forever thing. And I think that's where a lot of the hesitancy comes from. So maybe a bit of education around why you're wanting them to track as well could be beneficial.
Yeah, the word because is quite powerful, so use it wisely.
Question number three. What's the pros and cons of caffeine?
Keeps me awake.
Time has come, Brad.
The time has come. Okay, well, let's go some positives first. The positives is obviously gives you some energy. It's good for workouts. It's good for yeah, a nice ritual of feeling like that you're actually alert and stuff. It does, because it blocks the adenosine receptors, which is just like Adenosine just builds up throughout the day. That makes you tired. So that'll just block the receptors from communicating from each other. So then you're, oh, nice and alert now. So that's all that works on. It can potentially boost your metabolism a little bit through activity as well. There was like a study that showed like maybe 1,000 steps more than people that didn't have caffeine. It can break down triglycerides more with caffeine. Whether that's more fat loss, hard to say in the research, don't know, but it does help with the breakdown of the tri like the fats and stuff easier. Mood boosting as well. I'm not going to go into lowest risks of certain things because I don't think that we have enough data showing that, because that's a lot of what do you call it? Bigger studies, not like full on cohorts of placebo controlled studies. It's more the, what do you call it? With all the fucking studies, what are they called?
Meta-analyses.
No, not meta-analyses. No, doesn't matter. So there's some pros. You got any more for the pros?
Alertness, performance, energy. They're the big three for me.
Yep. And then the cons. So sleep disruption is a big one for people
Major
that,
one.
especially slower metabolizers. Jitteriness as well, it can make you feel anxious too, just because you're all hyped up and stuff. There is a lethal dose of about, I think it's 10,000 milligrams. It can cause heart rhythmic, like rhythms in your heart too, as well at certain dosages. So people with heart conditions, you've got to be careful of that as well. There has been deaths with, I think it was 600 milligrams. So that was because they had heart conditions and stuff, but it is something to be aware of. I don't want to scare people out there. I just wanted to let you know that these things do happen. What else is there?
So I think
Gastrointestinal like shit, like you know when you have some like pre-workout or coffee or whatever, that you're straight to the toilet because it is gastric emptier. So there's that as well, which could be good, it could be bad depending on where you're at.
the biggest con of caffeine is people using it as a crutch to mask things, and that's
Dependency on it.
that's pain, that's poor sleep, that's poor lifestyle choices. I think that's the biggest con of caffeine. That's not me having a dig at you, but that's
Nah, you're good. It's fine. That's why I was like, I was researching. I'm
the
like, yeah, that's the one thing I left out on the thing. It's there. I just didn't
impact.
say it. But yeah, it's a de dependency and withdrawal that you get from it, because it is a drug.
And that's the thing. I think if caffeine was to be found nowadays, it would be taxed very similarly to alcohol. And I think it could potentially be in the illicit substances category at certain dosages, because it is a drug, and you do have classic withdrawal symptoms for it. But I think that's the major con of it, is people use it as a crutch, and they use it as a way to mask poor lifestyle and behavior choices. So that's poor sleep, that's drinking too much alcohol, overtraining. Let's say they've got pain and they want to mask the pain a little bit, because caffeine can be a little bit of a pain killer, pain blocker. They're the main ones that come to me. And just the dependency. Like, how often have you heard people go, "Oh, I can't function today, I haven't had my coffee." Okay, do you really want to be dependent on a substance to be able to keep you functioning as a human? I would not want to be in that situation where I'm reliant on anything to keep me going. That's just me, though.
Yeah.
So,
And
having said that, I'm essentially fueled by chicken breast and rice.
the thing, and that's why I like doing a little bit of research on this. I was just like, man, like this is one place where I've probably been ignorant of, and what's the
I don't
word?
think you're ignorant. I think you've just chose to turn a blind eye to it.
Where there's a word for it. Oh, I can't even think of it.
Like, you've always been aware of caffeine's
I
effects,
have.
pros and con.
I
You've
have. I
always been
have.
aware. You've just chosen to
Use
indulge
it.
in all the pros.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, and that's why I wanted to do it, because I'm like, I have not had caffeine for years, for a long period of time, and I kind of don't want to be dependent on it. Like, the only time is when I go overseas. Like, I'm not always having coffees and stuff, which is great. But then straight back here, it's just the ritual of having the coffee in the morning and then having the Monster and then having the pre-workout. And yeah, it just can be more like, oh, this is just a part of my life, kind of like health and fitness, where it's just like, well, how will I actually feel? So I'm really keen to see, especially how my sleep, because I know how much sleep helps. Like when you get a good amount of quality sleep, how much better you feel. And then I think the caffeine is starting to affect that. So yeah, I'm keen. I'm actually really excited to drop it. Probably not the first month, but after that, I'm really keen to see how much more productivity I have, how much better I sleep, how much clearer I think. Because I don't know why, but I'm just not fully clear with the way that I'm thinking. But that's okay. Probably because I'm hyped on caffeine.
Yeah, look, it's not all doom and gloom. Like there are lots of benefits to it.
Appetite suppressant.
Yeah, exactly. And if you are to be going into a fat loss phase, that's when I would encourage people to use caffeine more as an appetite suppressant, as a way to have something other than water, consume something other than water to get, add a little bit of flavor to your palate, which may be becoming more bland because your food options available to you are less and less. So it's not all doom and gloom with caffeine, and
No,
it's
not
not
at all.
like either of us are like, you need to get off caffeine.
No.
It's just a case of knowing the pros and the cons and using that knowledge and going, okay, maybe I'll spend some time with less caffeine. Okay, I'm heading into a fat loss phase. I'll have a little bit more caffeine now. And that's where the last 3 to 4 weeks with me personally, I'm like, okay, I don't want to have caffeine just because it's a run day and I don't want to get a headache. So I've been gradually getting myself to a point where I'm having less and less of it and just slowly weaning myself back and off. And you know the ritual that I used to have would it'd be only on a weekend. So that's probably where I'll get back to and then maybe utilize it on training days or if I'm really struggling to get my ass up and go for a run, which probably will happen at some point. But that's what it always used to be for me. It used to be I'll use it when I'm feeling flat, which is the crutch thing that I talked about. But because I wasn't having it every day, I felt it was okay. Maybe it's a little bit of justification you've done with yourself. It's been like, yeah, it's fine. It's not a problem.
Yeah,
It's not a
exactly. And that's,
yeah.
yeah, it's a cognitive bias for sure. Of like, yeah,
It's not an issue. I just love it, which is what lots of people say. Oh, no, my coffee consumption is an issue. I just really enjoy drinking a cup of coffee. Look, I totally get it, man. I totally get it. But is it detrimental to your health in the fact of you're having to have it every day? It's actually interrupting your sleep. Like these are all factors that people need to probably look at. And ordering will help. Shout out.
yeah. And it's for me, it's yeah, like it's hard because I just love it. I'm like, I fucking love caffeine, and I think I just labeled myself like that. So that's where I'm like, okay, now I've got to kind of just look at myself. All right, it's probably time I've got to address this.
Yeah.
And I think not doing the alcohol has helped a lot. Of like, okay, what else can I remove that's not serving me right now?
Yeah.
Caffeine's obviously serving me a reason, but it's like, okay, I've kind of got to get over that hump to see what my actual baseline is without the caffeine, because I know it's, yeah, it's good.
Well, Chris Williamson's done this on several occasions, yeah. He's done the many months of sobriety from alcohol, and then he's also gone caffeine free as well. I think he is a pretty big proponent of doing that every now and then. Shout out to the man.
Course, it's not a podcast without shouting out him or Hormozy, eh?
And final question number four. Can I get to 10% body fat in 10 weeks?
Can you get to 10% body fat in 10 weeks? Yes, if you are 11% body fat. Look, I mean, this shit is so arbitrary. Like, it depends on like where you're starting. Two, why do you even want to get to 10% body fat in the first place?
That's the
No
big
one gives a fuck about your body fat percentage, and even if they did, you wouldn't even be able to accurately assess how much body fat you have. So that's without that. You know, now that that's out the way, you're going for a look. This 10% is from a guy, and it's obvious that it's the 10%. They've been told that if you're 10% body fat, you get the six pack. So really, you're going for the six pack, if I was to really read this question. So it's like, can you get A six pack in 10 weeks, like I said, if you're at like maybe 12 or 13%, or visually you can just see your abs, maybe potentially 10 weeks is a good amount of time to be in a fat loss phase, and you could lose a lot of fat with that, and you could add about 5 to 10% for women as well, asking this question. But it's like, one, why does it matter about the percentage? All right, we've done episodes on 10 habits to get 10 to 10%, but it's like you're looking for a look, not a percentage, because you could look really good at a high percentage and be like, oh, actually, no, I'm pretty good with that. So you're looking for a look, right? And the 10 weeks is just arbitrary of like where you're starting. If you're at 30%, 10 to 10%, no. But again, look at the whole, why do you want to get to 10%?
I think the answer is yes, but it depends on where you're starting, and then after that, and but why do you want to? I think that's pretty
Yes, and
much,
why?
yeah. Yes, it depends, but why? It's just an arbitrary number. Like, I've never tested for my body fat in my entire life, I don't think, and I don't really care to in the future. I mean, I've been asked it before, and I'm like, yeah, if I was to guess, maybe this, but who knows how much fat I hold in my legs, and who knows how much fat I hold in my lower back, and what that does to my overall body fat percentage. I'm not really, it's not really something I've ever been phased on. It's very much a bodybuilding-esque sort of question. But yes, you can, depending on where you're starting from. But why do you want to? I think that sums that question up well. Look at the why. Why do you want to hit that 10% body fat? It's more than likely a look. With men, it's body fat. With women, it's a number on the scale. Hey, do you
Yeah,
find that?
I do
Men want to hit a
find.
certain body fat percentage, and women tend to want to be a certain number on the scale, but they're associating a look and an aesthetic that they idolize, and that is what they're going for, not the actual number. And they will do unsustainable, unachievable things in order to hit that certain number, but yet that's not actually going to get them to the look that they desire. So the look that they desire probably is a different body fat percentage or different number on the scale to what they're actually envisioning. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, it's very fair. It's just like sometimes you got to get them down to that number for them to realize it themselves as well, or a
Yeah.
certain body fat percent. It's like, okay, yes, we've got here, but now we need to build muscle to actually get the look that you want. And they're like, okay, all right, I trust you now. You
Yeah,
trusted me like 6 months ago, but that's fine.
yeah. Yeah, I think that's very much the case. They associate a body fat percentage or a number on the scale with a certain look, but it's an actual look that they're going for. Anyway, that's a wrap for today's episode. If you want your questions answered in the future, make sure you're following us at brain.body.movement, at Brad Dapper, and at Brock underscore Dugleish. And you can ask us a question whenever we put up a sticker box or shoot us a DM. Now, we just want to say thank you so much for listening to us. If you got any value from this episode, we would really appreciate it if you shared it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us so we can say thanks. We would also appreciate it if you shared it with family and friends and left us a 5-star review. But before we go, we can leave you with a few things. Make it embed, get your steps in, and be kind to one another.
Cheers. And you could just add this on to, 10%, 15 to 10, 20, 10 to 5 to 10% for women as well. Jeez, I got that one out. Fucking hell. And you can, okay. All right, mate. Let me redo that.